780 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the gyms in the BC. It is Sunday, the 16th of September, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, I thought Rob Linton was going to walk out the door after Rob
I'm sorry about that.
And leave the thing unopened, right? Just in your
well, you know, the funny part about it is that they had some problems this morning, and it's amazing how in a radio station the size of Wham,
yeah,
and the amount of stuff we have here at Mission Control, one little fuse caused a problem. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the scary part. So that's what we've been doing.
That's what you've been doing, playing with fuses?
That's right.
Like, yeah. NASA on that. They ran into problems with that one mission up in space. What fixed it? Duct
tape. Yep.
It's insane.
The power of duct tape.
All right, AMD is hosting an event at the San Francisco Studios of Lucasfilms, which is an AMD customer, to unveil its quad-core chip, codenamed Barcelona, which has four independently operating processor cores in one piece of silicon versus Intel's placing two dual-core processors on one piece of silicon. That's an important distinction, according to Bruce Shaw, who, of course, is the director of server and workstation product marketing at AMD. With performance and power efficiency both top concerns of x86 server operators, Shaw says AMD's native quad-core design provides more power flexibility than Intel's pairing two cores together. AMD processor wattage can vary based on the workload of each core, with Intel's design power can vary only to two cores at a time. I'm able to apply better power management at the silicon level with AMD. Not every core needs to be running at the same speed at the same time, he says. Analysts say AMD needs Barcelona to rebuild its reputation as a viable challenger to the giant Intel. AMD scored a coup in 2003, beating Intel to market with its dual-core Opteron processor. At first, only IBM used Opterons in one of its servers, but eventually HP, Dell, and Sun followed. Intel responded, though, using its size and marketing muscle to prevail in a price war. AMD lost $1.7 billion over the last three quarters, due in large part to Intel's price pressure. Intel attempted to steal the thunder for AMD's September 10th announcement, with news September 5th of server vendors using Xeon 7300 quad-core Intel next-generation processor, codenamed Penryn, which is slated for release in the fourth quarter. We have clear leadership and performance, says Intel's vice president. We believe our leadership will be sustained post-Barcelona launch as well, which begs the question, who actually needs a quad-core processor?
Tell you what, let me try one for a year.
Yeah, right.
And I'll get back to you. Well, Apple, I would love to have that problem. You know, test it out.
Apple ships the quad-core Mac Pro, which has two dual-core processors, and it's mostly the video arena where you're rendering video all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But Intel, and in fact, Apple uses it. Apple ships an 8-core model that has two quad-core chips in it, the Cloverton chip.
Right.
Which is already quad-core and has been out for 6 months or so.
Well, that's where you got to get into the at least two monitors and right. 512 dual graphic card.
Well, but what AMD is saying is that Intel's quad-core is really two dual cores stuck on the same chip,
mm-hmm.
whereas theirs is true quad-core. Each core is independent and can be independent, whereas in the Intel case, two are slaved and the other two are slaved. So there's no real quad core independence, which means that you can't. And what this is really all about at this point is conserving power in the server room. One of the things that people are realizing is that there's this giant hole of suckage when it comes to electricity, and it's called your server room. And anything they can do to lower the amount of power being used in the server room is a good thing. So if you can get to the point where you have four cores all running independently,
right.
instead of two cores running fast because of one process, one core runs fast because of one process, and you save power.
Well, that's like them taking two of the stickers and putting them side by side on the front of the case and, taping them. Now it's a quad core.
Yeah, right.
That's the way it looks, you know?
Right.
you save power twice, because not only does the core run less power when you're when it can shut itself down, but also you don't require as much air conditioning.
Exactly.
As a result.
Exactly. One of the things that I've had to do, and I'm not a big fan of air conditioning. I don't know if my allergies, whatever it is, I just don't like air conditioning very much. I don't feel good in it. I have unfortunately had to put air conditioning in the computer room. So
yeah, that was always the nicest place to go during the summer.
Yeah, the whole family crowds into the computer. We're all three of us sitting. It was kind of nice. We have family time together in the computer room. But in the server room, for example, at RIT, they've got gigantic things that look like vans. You know, there's like a dozen of them scattered around to keep everything cool. And yes, it would be lovely if you had a lower power system that required less air conditioning. Now you're saving twice. And the same thing I think will be true as time goes on with desktops. If you can have a lower power desktop, first in terms of laptops, you know, that way you're not toasting your future children while you're sitting there with your laptop actually in your lap. There have been talks about people, you know, who have, they worry about sterility. I don't know that there is any, but they worry about it. And people have actually gotten burns on their thighs from their laptops.
I thought we decided it's computer geeks just don't have any women.
That's right. It's like it matters to right. But the reality is that there is a whole lot of concern about people actually. You know, we've all seen the pictures of the laptops that burst into flame. Dave's got some on his website.
I got one on my website.
And in fact, the other day I was at a meeting. We were talking about laptops, and one guy turned his over, and the bottom is all blistered.
Oh yeah.
So anything that would make those, but, you know, God forbid you give up, you know, a half a gigahertz in speed, because, you know, it can't be fast enough. If you ran something a little slower, it'd be a lot cooler.
Down the road.
Nobody does that anymore. But what they're hoping is the next generation will be both faster and cooler.
Down the road, it wouldn't surprise me, though. I mean, we've kidded around about this a long time. It's coming up with some type of, like, liquid nitrogen.
Yep.
To cool it.
Well, liquid cooling is common. Well, not really common, but it's available in high-end machines. A lot of the gamers use it so they can tweak more performance. And it's quieter because you don't have any fans. Apple used it on a few of their machines. Then you've got plumbing and cooling pumps to worry about and fluid leaking.
Well, that's the big one, the fluid leak. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. Leaks. Yeah, right. Well, Apple has been notorious over the years for either not having fans or having fans that were ultra quiet and ran slow. Mm-hmm. And that requires a lot of extra heat management. But what I don't know is how that works in the MacBooks, in the laptop line. I think they get kind of hot.
The laptops get really hot. You can't use laptops on your lap anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they're notebooks now.
Remember the computer, it had the liquid cooling meeting bag?
No.
Yeah, they had the units that you could sit there on the side of the case and you'd watch the fluids going through the whole system.
Oh, yeah, you can do that. A lot of gamers make that happen. They put windows in the sides. And
then they a company here locally had it where you'd have the tubes. And you
frozen could, CPU.
Frozen CPU. Thank
All right,
you.
We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 15 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 19 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbite. Before we get to the phones, real quick, another piece of news. A Las Vegas man faces about 20 years in prison after he agreed to plead guilty to wire fraud for impersonating an intellectual property lawyer and threatening lawsuits against owners of internet domain names. According to the FBI, David Scali is charged with registering an email account under an alias and then sending emails in which he claimed to be the intellectual property lawyer. In the emails, which were sent out in late June and early July of last year, Scali threatened to find $100,000 trademark infringement lawsuits against owners of various internet website names unless they gave up their domain name registrations within 2 days. According to the report, Scali specialized in going after one-off or domain names with nomenclature similar to the big name websites. Like if you did Microsoft with a zero instead of an O or, you know, whatever that might be. Mostly they do it by typos. You know, how many times have you typed in Goggle instead of Google? Well, that actually takes you to a site.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the bigger companies will register misspellings themselves.
Now they will, exactly. Yeah. But there are a bunch that are already registered, and he was buying them up. And so, and there's not, certainly nothing wrong with buying them up. The problem is, of course, he impersonated a lawyer to do that. And that kind of porks off the real lawyers. So he's looking at about 20 years in jail. So the moral of that story is, A, don't commit wire fraud, and B, don't do it while pretending to be a lawyer.
Well, I've heard about these scams in other industries, too, and some of them are real lawyers threatening to file real lawsuits. There's a lot of problems with the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act.
Yep.
So we ran into this when we were remodeling our office. The toilet has to be 26 inches from the wall or some, you know, some real specific measurement. Yeah, so they'll go in with a ruler and say, well, yours is only 25 inches from the wall. We'll sue you.
Yep.
And so most small companies pay them off to avoid the litigation, but then they don't have the money to actually fix the problem. So a month later, another lawyer comes in with the same claim.
Right. All right. We're going to go to the phones now. We have Bill from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Thank you, Dittos, Nick.
And the same to you.
I run Windows XP, and I faithfully run Spybot and Adware, and when I close my Windows XP Home Edition, I get a dialog box lately, and the banner on the dialog box says, End Program, capital WMS file, and then it tells me it's ending the program, please wait, and if you want to, then the lower right-hand corner has a button that says End Now. If I press that, it disappears, and then the program does close out. Nothing happens. Everything fine. And the message in the dialog box tells you if you activate this, you will lose anything that's not saved, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, the message is telling you that some program hasn't quit normally and is giving you the option of forcing it to quit.
Real player?
Well, no, WMS file is the Windows Media Player skin file.
Right.
So if you have a custom skin on your Windows Media Player, it could be that that's not releasing properly.
Do you run Media Player a lot?
No.
Did he say WMS?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing here another one here, file extension. WMS is also related to
Real Player. Yeah, it is a media file thing, however.
Yeah.
You keep Adware and Spybot updated, what do you use for your antivirus?
Just Windows.
One thing I would
Windows
suggest.
Windows doesn't have an antivirus.
But wait a minute. One thing I would recommend looking at is if you go to msconfig.
Mm-hmm.
Type in the, you know, go to start, go to run, go to msconfig, and check the startup bar. And then see if there is in the startup portion any particular, say, sound program or something else that's trying to run in the background.
Right.
Like Real Player or one of these other players, whether it's QuickTime or who knows what.
Well, the one I get annoyed about is you install Nero burning software and it loads the Nero Media Player too.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I just
want
to burn disks. I've got other programs to play music with.
But check in there and see if
you mean like every time I load anything from Apple, it loads QuickTime, whether I want it or not?
Not anything, only media programs, like iTunes.
All right. I would you try that, Bill, but also I would suggest you dance the Security Tango.
Okay.
Go to securitytango.com, click the Let's Dance button, print out that page and follow the instructions. And make sure that when you're done, you add an antivirus program to your system. Right now, my favorite is Avast. It's Avast at Avast.com. It is free. It does everything. I like it a lot.
Thank you.
Oh, I found a new one for replace Zonal.
A what?
I just was playing around. I'll report back on it next week.
Oh, all right. We won't ask you that.
Yeah, but it's a good program. That's why I don't want to say anything until I have a chance to thoroughly check it out.
Right.
I've been investigating. So far, it's getting even better marks than Zonal. And guess what?
Free is good. But yeah, a Spybot and Adware are great, but they are for spyware. They're not for viruses.
Okay,
so
thank you.
You need to be running both. So that, I think, should do it for you.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. Bye. That's one thing I think confuses people.
There are so many problems. You have to run so many programs.
Well, and that's part of it. Yeah, absolutely. There are too many people who have an antivirus program.
He's not even listening.
Who don't have an antivirus program because they think Spybot and Adware do it.
Yeah.
They also think that Microsoft actually has an antivirus program. Now, certainly Vista does come with Windows Defender.
Yeah,
I don't know that I trust it so much, but it does. It comes with it, at least. That's something.
Yeah, but the thing that is how often are they going to be updating it compared to these companies that, do it for a living?
Right, and that's the other part of the problem.
Plus, the story we ran a few weeks ago is that the virus writers know about Norton and McAfee and now, Windows Defender, because it comes with Vista, and they intentionally write their viruses to work around those programs.
But the
ones like Avast and AVG and Kaspersky are even better.
Right,
because we're not seeing the viruses.
Well, but that doesn't mean they aren't out there. We aren't seeing new ones.
No. Right.
But if the guy's not running any antivirus program, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I agree with you there. Yeah. But what I'm saying, though, is lately I have not seen, I'll bet you in the past 6 months, like when we had a virus come out and we'd sit there and say, you got to do an update. We got to do an update because it could cause this and this to happen. Granted, we're getting a lot of Trojans, but they're also trying to now, these virus writers, we always used to say, I don't know why they write them. They don't get any benefit out of it because they weren't getting paid. It was the notoriety.
Right.
Whereas now these guys are writing the Trojans and these other spam programs to steal information. And that's their key focus.
Doing that stuff is now a $105 billion a year business in 2006. 2003 or four was the first year that illicit gains from writing spyware actually made more money than the illicit gains from drugs. And that has only grown since then. So if you realize how much money people are making on drugs and what they'll do to get and keep that money, you can imagine it's worse now in the spyware and, malware, as we call it, arena. So you really need to protect yourself because unlike drugs where you have to go out and buy them, here it's really more a matter of, my machine just got owned, and that's not something you want to have happen. So there are people in particularly with the fall of the Soviet Union, there were a whole lot of people who just had no jobs, no life, no infrastructure anymore, but they had coding skills and they're now making, a couple of bucks a day and that's still more than they had. Right. So, but the people who are paying them to write all this code are making billions, literally with a B, billions of dollars. Yep. So not only are they not going to quit, but they're going to step up the effort. And so you need to make sure that you have protected yourself in some way. And that's the tough part right now, because again, as we've always said, it's a leapfrog game. You do your part and the next day they make something better. And then the antivirus people fix that. And you're leapfrogging over each other. So that's kind of the thing that's hard to keep a handle on. You have to be always on your toes. Eternal vigilance. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 30 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We're on the air. Don't stop saying your password.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton. This long one.
You guys are a mess. It's like, how long we've been doing this?
Yeah, I know it. And it's 32 minutes after the hour, and apparently we couldn't care less. And we are Soundbites. All right, so here we go. NASA. NASA researchers have designed and built a new circuit chip that can take the heat of a blast furnace and keep on performing. Silicon carbide chips can operate in 600 degrees Celsius or 1,112 degrees Fahrenheit, where conventional silicon-based electronics, limited to about 350 degrees Celsius, would fail. In the past, integrated circuit chips could not withstand more than a few hours of high temperatures before degrading or failing. This chip exceeded 1,700 hours of continuous operation at 500 degrees Celsius, a breakthrough that represents a 100-fold increase in what has previously been achieved, NASA said. Typically, as chips become more dense, they are constrained by their own heat, with modern processors using up to 100 watts per square centimeter. This is the same kind of thing we were talking about earlier in terms of power consumption. That is already pushing the upper limit of current cooling technology, which relies on fans to blow air over heat sinks. The new silicon carbide differential amplifier integrated circuit chip, may provide benefits to anything requiring long-lasting electronic circuits in very hot environments such as jets, spacecraft, and the industrial machinery, and my laptop. So in addition to all of those things, the capabilities of handling higher voltage and current requirements, yet with smaller die sizes, is also appealing to reduce NASA's missions operation and launch costs. This high-temperature, radiation-hardened silicon carbide-based power conversion system will find extensive applications in space exploration. This also means we'll eventually be seeing it in our machines, I suspect, because everything that comes out of the space program eventually comes to us.
Right, and maybe we'll finally get some cooler graphics chips.
Wouldn't that be nice? And that's one of the other problems that we have, which is that your graphics cards now have their own fans on them, you know? So, and because of that, that's just added heat in the system, need more cooling, need a bigger fan, need a louder fan.
Well, that's the thing, though. I've also seen these fans aren't always the best, and they freeze up. I've literally had to have machines, you know, like you say, overheat because the bearings in that are not that great in them, and you got to take them outside, blow them all out.
And especially after you've been running your computer for a while, it gets accumulated with dust on the inside, and the fan blades clog up, and so you got to pay attention to the sound your computer's making. And if the sound changes, you know, something happened, take a look at it. Maybe the fan's not spinning as much, or I've seen them where the wires will interfere with the blades and cause the fan to stop spinning, and then it overheats and dies.
I've had them overheat so bad that the fan's blades actually crack, and I found chunks of the blade inside.
We had one motherboard, I forget which one it was we were using on a system. I was working on a computer, and I hear this music coming from the other room, and it turns out it was Beethoven's Fur Elise. You know, where's this music coming from? There's no radio in the other room. So I finally figured out it was this motherboard. I had forgot to plug the fan in when I built the computer, and the motherboard had a built-in overheat detection circuit, and if it overheated, it played Fur Elise instead of just beeping. Someone was a Beethoven fan, but we have to give some sort of tone when it overheats. What, you know, we can do a beep or well, let's play some music. Yeah.
You know, one other question I was getting on the board was a lot of folks have been asking about it is our security Tango with this. I mean, more and more folks are getting forced to use, well, are being told, like we've said in the past few weeks, well, you got to run Vista. And they're sitting there saying, now my iPod's not working. I had one lady, her computer was working fine. She had Vista on it, and she was trying it, and she was running with the printer, but then it did an update, and she moved the computer, and it stopped working because of the update. And I even went to the website, tried to get a patch there that they claim, oh, we'll make Vista work with it. Yeah, wrong. After an hour and a half, finally said, forget it. It just ain't going to work. And she goes, well, it was working. Yeah, it very well might have. You know, I don't doubt that for one second. But the problem is once Microsoft gets out there and then does some of these patches, things that were working, you know, and it was very, you know, you didn't do much with it other than check your email and do that type of stuff, stop working. And it can happen.
Right.
Nothing I can do about it.
The problem, of course, with that is when you buy a laptop or a desktop from any one of the package stores, right? Any one of the, you know, places, they're going to just sell you what's on the shelf.
Oh, yeah.
And that's almost always going to be a Vista machine nowadays. When you go to somebody like Dave or Steve and say, I want a computer, and oh, by the way, I want XP on it, you can get that still.
Still, until Microsoft stops selling XP.
But for the moment, you still can. And the other part of the problem is, even if you get a Vista machine and you decide to go out and buy a copy of XP to put on it, you often don't get the restore disk for Vista. So you can't go back to Vista if you want it.
Right. Oh, well, the minute you...
And you know, that saves the company, what, 5 cents? Because they don't have to include a Windows disk?
Yeah, exactly.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Well, Dell, rather, charges you, which a lot of folks don't realize, when you get a system, you don't get the CDs with it. All they're selling you is that license. You want the CDs to do the restore and all that, that's going to be extra. $75, thank you very much.
They're
cutting back. This is the other thing. Oh, I got to get into it. Folks are getting upset. They buy these package machines, like you said, at these stores. They get home. They go to hook up their other peripheral.
Mm-hmm.
And if they happen to have an old, say, printer cable, it's not USB, they go to hook it up in the back, and there's no place to hook it up.
Right, because there's no parallel port anymore.
Yeah, they've done away with the parallel port. It's like
finally.
Well, you know, I mean,
Parallel.
Yeah. I mean, still, you know, why not put it on there? It's still, for some of your functions, you don't need the fast speed. You know, if it's like an inkjet, oh, they're slow anyway. So just send the job to it and let it print. This way you can go on doing whatever you want on one of the other printers that is USB. So, you know, from time to time, it was handy to have. Sure, it was a little bit slower, but do we really need things blazing fast all the time? No. Sorry.
Well, a lot of it was the interrupt issue. You know, a few years ago, the most common tech support call was, I need to buy some new interrupts because my computer says I'm out of interrupts.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, especially with the old modem. You know, I mean, if you had a modem in there and you hit the mouse and any other device, they were always fighting over.
Right. How many of our answers were your mouse and your modem are on the same interrupt, and yep, that's where your problem lies?
You had to change it, and I mean, it was a big headache. But since we've, majority of folks nowadays go to, you know, the internet through either like a DSL or, you know, Frontier or one of those,
right?
It's not an issue anymore. I haven't sold the modem, I'll bet you. I haven't stocked the modem in a hell of a long time. I've got some old used ones, and they're still yeah, good. I've literally pulled 56Ks that are maybe a month or two old. They're just sitting around.
We still have some customers in the southern tier and down along the Finger Lakes, right, where you can't get high speed.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we do modems now and then.
Yeah.
But, and laptops all still come with modems built in, but
yep,
I'll tell you what, I'm rusty. I'd have to really think about setting up a modem before I could do it again.
I just had to do one again, and this one lady, she spent a lot, talk about tech support.
Yeah.
She was on the phone. She said, an hour and a half? Yeah, an hour and a half, trying to get her email straight. I came over to the house and kind of going through it, and no, invalid. I'm looking at it. It was usdatanet.net.
I heard they're getting out of the ISP business. I've got a friend on them.
Yeah. They're going over. Yeah, she's gotten a letter and everything else. Well, here she's on the phone with this person, she said, for an hour and a half. I solved their problem for her in about 10 minutes. As I pulled up the internet, she's using, of course, Outlook Explorer. But we pulled it up, and I was looking at the properties and checked the SMTP and the POP. They were all labeled correctly. I noticed her email. It was her name at usadatanet.com. Now, right. Wait a minute.
That's wrong. How many times has it been a simple misspelling, and you've stared at that screen for years?
But here, the tech person, though, for an hour and a half,
right?
She goes, she had me go through this three or four times.
Yep.
I go, and she didn't catch that?
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 42 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 47 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. We're going to go right to the phones now. Our next caller is Jim from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi. I've got a PC, and my daughter, who just went away to college, has a MacBook Pro. We'd like to set up, you know, a way to video conference between the two of us. You know, what it's like. Make free phone calls, but video phone calls. Is it possible to communicate between the Mac and a PC?
Oh, sure. Apple ships their computers with the built-in cameras now, which is neat, so you can do video conferencing.
Yeah, she saw that on her side. But
right,
yeah,
Apple uses the iChat program, which connects to the AOL Instant Messaging Network. So anyone using AIM on a PC can connect to the Mac and chat through the internet as well.
Oh, okay.
So you can use AOL Instant Messenger for Windows, which is free. You can also get Skype on both computers, which is free for computer to computer. Skype also allows you to make computer to phone and phone to computer calls, but that costs money. There's also the Gizmodo project, which is a free open source video messaging.
But if he wants to do video conferencing, he'd have to get a camera, isn't
it? Right. At the other end, if you want to do two-way video conferencing, you'd need a camera at the other end. iChat and Skype can both do one-way video conferencing, so the person with a camera can send a video to the other person. The other person just sends audio back.
Okay, yeah, I did pick up a Logitech camera for PC, but I wasn't exactly, you know, I didn't know what software to use, but if I do the AOL messaging, that'll be great.
Yeah, Apple picked the AIM network when they set up instant messaging because that was the biggest at the time.
Okay. Is there one version of it over another that would be more advantageous? Or
The most recent version.
Okay. Yep. Well, very good.
All right, thanks.
Thank you so much. Yep. A lot of the podcasters do remote interviews over Skype now, and it works out really good, too.
Yeah, I bet it does. All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 49 minutes after the hour on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 53 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. All right, kiddies, sit back, grab your hot cocoa, put on your footy jammies, and sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. If we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Hey, you gotta be nice to me. I'm getting older this week.
That's right, you are. Your birthday's coming up. Steve's birthday's...
mine's first, and then Dave.
The 19th, yeah, you're the 20th.
I got my wife on Tuesday. He's on Wednesday. My granddaughter, matter of fact, tomorrow.
Well, my week for you.
My stepdaughter's birthday is today, so happy birthday, Dorinda.
Yeah.
My sister-in-law's birthday is today. She lives in Oklahoma, probably isn't listening.
I can't believe she's not listening.
This week.
See, it's a really cold January. That's the birthday since September.
This week I'm really not going to, brag on anything. I guess a couple of misconceptions. A lot of folks in the past few weeks have been coming in and saying, we do repair, and I've been doing repairs for over 15 years. To kind of give the folks, it's not my main focus, but we do build custom build systems. As Nick has said a number of times, we're here, we're local, and I try to be very competitive, as do the rest of the folks out there right now in our business, trying to keep the dollars here locally. We try to give you a good price compared to the big stores and everything else. But the big thing is when you have an issue, like we've been saying for years, I've been saying it for over 15 years, at least you got a face to talk to. It's not this long distance, right? Like that one lady I felt so bad for. Here she had this HP machine, and she was running into issues, and she was talking overseas for over an hour and a half, and literally got nothing out of it. It's very frustrating and very time-consuming for folks, whereas here locally, walk folks through things and everything else, and we can do it. Plus, we also give you the things that they don't tell you. Like before, you heard me say, you got to watch what you buy. We take the time to sit down with folks and find out what they're going to do with it. So if they have that parallel printer that they don't want to get, do away with right now because it's an old HP, but it's working fine, thank you very much. We find these things out. Whereas a salesperson at the other end, some of these bigger stores and that, they just want to push a box out the door and forget support because that's somebody else in some other country. Whereas right. We're here, we're, going to support it. And we also give you the software. That's one thing that the way they cut things back is I've had a couple of folks come in and, their hard drives have died. Yeah, well, it's just out of warranty. All right, where's your CDs to reload? I didn't get any. Don't you have them? No, you've got to have them. Companies are charging extra for them.
Well, and some of the times it's a restore partition on the hard drive. Well, your hard drive failed, so you can't restore anymore.
Yeah, and sometimes there's an application you run that
you're supposed to make it yourself.
Requires either a CD, a DVD, or 204 floppies.
And that, again, is something we provide, like with our laptops and that, they come with restore CDs. We make those for you so you can have those. God forbid anything happened, that you had to redo it. But, hey, stuff does happen. We give you the tools so you can redo it.
Right.
Unlike a lot of them, like I say, but we're here, we're local, and yes, we do build custom PCs. I used to have it on my website that you could configure one. I got a lot of folks, all they were doing was checking it out for the heck of it.
I do that at Apple. I max everything out just to see how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, right.
Well, no, I was getting a lot of folks that were just fishing because, they were curious for, a Saturday afternoon and wanted to quick get a quote from me. Well, that takes time because...
It's like going out and kicking the tires, but... That doesn't take the salespeople any time at all.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't have the time to do it. If somebody's serious and wants, really thinking about getting one from us, I'll sit down and I like to talk to folks. Not just fill out some blank form and generically say it's going to work for you.
Uncle Dave spent all his time today. He has to rest now. While we give him his shot, you kids put away your cocoa mugs, rinse them out. Put on your clothes again, and we'll put Uncle Dave to sleep.
What were they doing getting undressed?
Until next week. They were in their footy jammies. You missed that because you were asleep.
Thank you.
And we'll do more of Uncle Dave next week.
I don't want to picture that.
Uncle Dave, go to sleep. He's in crackers. He's like a 4-year-old. Go to sleep.
Grandpa forgot to take his medicine again.
Hold him down while I spoon this into his throat.
Hey, respect your elder.
We respect you. We just don't like you. Dave is the grand old man of sound bites. He's old.
And I love every minute.
Exactly. Listen, we're going to take a break. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I have no idea why you're not. Because when we come back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, we're going to take more of your calls. We're going to talk about what goes on our website. We got more new. We got a fascinating poll this week. I'm very impressed with this one, actually. I realize every week it varies a little, but this week I like. And we'll be back on the other side of the news. So, again, if you are on the line, please stay on the line. And if you're not, give us a call. We'd love to answer your questions or just chit-chat about computers. I love the questions that are all about opinion, because there's 1, 2, 3, 4 of us back here. That makes 6 opinions, at least. Back on the other side of the news, it is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. And as you well know, that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Now, every week, we do a poll on our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll was about who the biggest bully in the computer industry was. The choices were Microsoft, Apple, Dell, Red Hat, and Canonical, the people who put out Ubuntu. Microsoft, unsurprisingly, had 73% of the votes. Apple trailed at 21%, Dell 5%, Red Hat had 3 votes, and Canonical 0 votes. Everybody loves Canonical. Well, they give away software. How could you not love them? This week's poll is about an interesting thing that happened during the week. Microsoft has begun patching files on Windows XP and Vista without the user's knowledge, even when users have turned off auto updates. Many companies require testing of patches before they are widely distributed, and businesses in this situation are objecting to the stealth patching. In recent days, Windows Update started altering files on user systems without displaying any dialog box to request permission. The only files that have been reportedly altered to date are 9 small executables on XP and 9 on Vista that are used by Windows Update itself. Microsoft is patching these files silently, even if auto updates have been disabled on a particular PC. It's surprising that these files can be changed without the user's knowledge. The automatic updates dialog box in the control panel can be set to prevent updates from being installed automatically. However, with Microsoft's latest stealth move, updates to the Windows Update executables seem to be installed regardless of the settings without notifying users. When users launch a Windows Update, Microsoft's online service can check the version of its executables on the PC and update them if necessary. What's unusual is that people are reporting changes in these files, although Windows Update wasn't authorized to install anything. This isn't the first time Microsoft has pushed updates onto users who prefer to test and install their updates manually. Not long ago, another Windows component, svchost.exe, was causing problems with Windows Update, as last reported back on June 21st. In that case, however, the Windows Update site notified users that an updated software had to be installed before the patching process could proceed. This time, such a notice never appeared. To make matters even stranger, a search on Microsoft's website reveals no information at all on the stealth update. Let's say you wish to voluntarily download and install the new Windows Update executable files when you were, for example, reinstalling a system. You'd be hard-pressed to find the updated files in order to download them. At this writing, you either had to get a stealth install or nothing. Now, let me say it is important to note there's nothing harmful about the updated files themselves. There's no reports of software conflicts, no reason to remove the files, which Windows Update apparently needs in order to access the latest patches. The only concern is the mechanism Microsoft is using to perform its patches and how this mechanism might be used by the software giant in the future. That is to say, sticking things on your computer without your knowledge. So the poll this week is, do you mind if Microsoft installs something without your knowledge? The choices are absolutely, it's unconscionable. And not if it's an update. Whatever Microsoft says is okay by me. And, of course, the Macintosh and the Linux. So far, we have 90 votes. And not surprisingly, absolutely, it's unconscionable leads at 69%, followed by the Linux, followed by not if it's an update, then the Mac, and whatever Microsoft says is okay with me. So So please go to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. And vote in the poll. When you're done with the poll, take a look at the little yellow box underneath it. That click on the link that says, give us your opinion. That will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
All righty then. where you can post an actual opinion. So far, we've got 8 opinions in there, most of which I'm shocked to say actually have something to do with the question. Very nice. And then come on back. Check my site out while you're there. I have a newsletter that I put out a few times a week, and you can, if you're a member, it's only $15 a year. I don't know why you wouldn't be a member. You can search the old archives, the old newsletters for information. You can view the latest newsletter. You can go in the forums and check all that stuff out. Of course, you can buy things at the Ask Nick shop. And when you come back to the Soundbites page, of course, you can buy things at the Soundbites shop. I don't understand why there aren't more people buying the thong, but okay, there's the hats and the shirts and the bags and the other stuff. So,
Nick, I've got mine on today.
Do you wear it?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes,
do you
wear it, sport the colors.
Do you wear it face in or face out?
Stop it.
TMI. TMI.
All righty then. Now that we've stepped way outside the bounds of propriety.
My brain's now burned.
You can send your complaint letters to WHAM Radio.
You're right.
Oh.
Remember, ladies and gentlemen, the opinions stated on this program are not necessarily those of any other panel member, WHAM, or any right-thinking human being. We're on to the next phone call, which is Andy from Greece. Welcome, Andy. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yeah. After that, you still call us gentlemen?
Well, I'm stretching it a little. Congratulations on the 18th birthday, by the way.
Thank you so very much.
Just thinking of it, 3 years, and you might even be legal enough to host it.
Oh man, we should have a drinking party on their 21st anniversary. What do you think? Yeah, probably
again.
Not. Again, as opposed to this week, where it's not actually a party, we're just drinking. What's your question, Andy?
Here. Two questions. One is a general one. You've talked a lot about the Trojan horses, keyloggers, all those other wonderful things that are out floating around. Are there any symptoms that show up that warn that would be indicative that you have one of these things?
Quite often not. Sometimes you might notice a little slowdown.
You might.
Which is hard to differentiate between the normal slowdown and the windows.
Right. But yeah, very rarely. There are two types of keyloggers. There's the software ones, and then, of course, there are actual hardware keyloggers. That requires obviously somebody to have access to your machine to put one on, and if you traced your keyboard back to the back of the computer, you might see an extra little connector there, and that would be it.
Sometimes you can see extra hard drive activity without you actually writing a file, because it's it writing a file.
Right. But in general, there's a lot of that goes on anyway in Windows. So really the best way to tell is by dancing the security tango and let the software tell you whether or not there's something there.
Okay, so it would show up in the software?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. If you've got something and you run, for example, Adaware, Spybot, whatever, it will come back and report to you if there is a problem.
Okay. Now, that leads us into the second part of the question. Sure. I have what a friend of mine jokingly calls Frankenstein 2000, part to part that I built it myself.
There you go.
Don't have a problem with missing parallel ports that way.
Yep.
We have an Asus A7N8XE Deluxe motherboard. With an AMD F1 XP2700 processor, gigabyte of RAM. We got XP Pro version 2002 Service Pack 2. All updates are in it. We do have the Spybot, the Adware, and Norton is the antivirus program of choice this week. Go to run this thing. Usually I don't have a problem with it. Runs Adware right through, no trouble, finds whatever it's supposed to, gets rid of it. Go to run Spybot. Make sure it's updated. All the updates are there. The immunizations are up to date. Partway through the program, and it's not the same part every time, all of a sudden the computer reboots.
Have you tried disabling the Norton?
Not yet.
I would try running it in safe mode, because there's probably something in your system Spybot is trying to remove, and it's fighting back.
And Norton, believe it or not, even just the antivirus program, is very possessive, and it wants to protect anything and everything. It overprotects sometimes.
Yeah. Okay, I've also had this problem happen in Norton.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me suggest two things. Okay. One, first, make sure your Norton is really up to date. Part of the problems with things like Norton and McAfee is that they are the main targets for the virus writers. If they can kill that, right, if they can kill that, they win. And often enough, you get caught by a virus that kills Norton or kills McAfee, and you don't know it because it doesn't kill it dead. It just makes it stop working, although it looks like it's working. So that's one of the reasons that we prefer AVG or Avast or one of those, which may work better. So let me suggest that you dance the entire security tango top to bottom and remove Norton and install one of the free ones like Avast or AVG and let it do its thing. And the other part of the problem is that unless you really dance the tango, go into safe mode and do all of that stuff, there are viruses that will hide in the restore program. There are viruses that will hide places, and only in safe mode do they no longer have a safe haven.
Your wife turned off the restore.
That's good. That's a good start.
It's a start.
But it's only a start. Okay. Again, you really need to dance the whole tango. One reason that I put the tango together, and it wasn't just me. We all, I mean, I wrote the website, but we all contributed to the steps.
Recommendation.
Is because it really requires all of that to be sure your machine is safe nowadays.
Okay.
I hate to say it, but it's true. Well,
that was the issue I had a couple of weeks ago where a customer had a mass mailing virus on their computer.
Yep.
Norton scanned it clean. Clam scanned it clean. I think it was Kaspersky that finally was able to remove it.
Yep. All right. Andy?
But, all right. Rob's waving his arm in there. What
for? I guess Andy's
hung
up.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, Rob. I guess Andy's hung up. Let's go on to our next caller, who's Patty from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Patty. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I listen to your program all the time, and I do get a lot of information from it.
Thank you.
My problem.
That's scary to think.
Oops,
whoa. We've been doing that.
She didn't say it was right information or good information. She just said it was information.
Yeah, that's true.
That's okay. True. Okay, well, Patty, what's your problem?
I've tried a lot of it, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I have a brand new Toshiba laptop.
Ooh.
And all of a sudden, 2 weeks of using it, I get an error message of registry data not found. It's an ID number, if that helps, 4218.
And what OS are you running?
Vista.
My sympathy.
It came, I as I said, I was listening to your program earlier, and I got one of these box deals where it came with it.
Yeah.
And I have the Home Premium brand.
What are you doing when you get the message?
It says, it's just a little box that pops up in the center, and the only thing that you could do is hit okay.
Before it comes up, what are you doing?
I'm just turning it on.
Mm. Isn't it special?
What changed? Have you added any software, anything at all?
No, I have not. I have tried downloading a couple of games, which might have done it.
Uh-huh. Here's part of the problem. With Vista, a lot of the games and things want to add something into the registry, change something in the registry. Things aren't necessarily in the same place in the registry in Vista where they were in XP. Also, Vista does a little bit, at least, to protect the registry.
And if you've uninstalled that game again, there may be a piece of it still looking for that registry entry that was put in the first place.
Right. A lot of games, particularly free ones, install, well, for a better lack of a better term, spyware, in your machine. So let me suggest you start, as always, by dancing the security tango.
That's one thing we got to check out. I haven't really tried playing all the parts of the tango on Vista. I'm going to have to try it on my workbench. Yep.
But start there. If that doesn't help, I'm afraid you're going to need to take it to somebody. Vista's so new that we hesitate to just have you fly around inside your machine.
And if you've only had it a couple of weeks, you may not have any data on it. You can do a wipe and restore, and that will get you back up and running if you don't have any data you need to keep.
Right. And always back up if you do have data.
Make sure
you can still
back,
do a wipe and restore.
CD.
Right. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Rake, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Before we go on, let me once again thank our friend Chris Reich, who every Sunday comes in here and volunteers. God knows we're not paying him. We don't pay anybody. God,
the donuts are great.
The donuts. He gets a donut. That's, you know, that's it. Yeah, he'll work for food. That's important. He comes in here every week and valiantly and selflessly gives his time and his own equipment to record the show every week so that we can get it up on the archive site and have it lovely.
unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't know what
that's about.
There's
a problem with the archive code. If you go to the Sunbites website /archives, you can download the new files.
Right.
But the automatic podcast download feed isn't working at the moment.
Right. Well, of course, since I have Linux, I didn't know that because we don't have iTunes.
And may I also say, Nick, that I am deeply in your debt also for allow me to play radio here. It's great. Thank you.
We all like to play. Radio is fun to play because you don't have to play dress up. You just have to come in.
Exactly.
Speaking of iTunes, here it is. It's finally happened. Unhappy with other media players being better than iTunes, Apple apparently has decided to stop them from working with the new range of iPods. This affects Linux users, since there's no Linux for iTunes, or no iTunes for Linux. The popular iPod Linux management tools like GTK Pod and Rhythmbox will not work with the new range of iPods. Windows users who just plain don't like iTunes and prefer an alternative like Winamp, FPod, or many of the other iPod management applications out there are also out of luck. Apple folks who have all drunk the Kool-Aid couldn't care less. The iPod keeps track of the songs and playlist in your iPod in a database file called iTunes DB, found in the iPod Control iTunes hidden folder on the iPod. Back in the early days of the iPod, the format of this file was quickly reverse engineered by people who wanted to use iPods without iTunes. This was more important back then because iTunes only existed on the Mac. The Windows users were stuck with RealPlayer, which was just awful, and Linux users had nothing. The format of this file has evolved over the years as the iPod added support for video, podcast, album artwork, smart playlists, etc. The basic structure of the file has always remained the same, so these changes were easy enough for us to work out and keep up to date with. With the release of the new range of iPods, the new Nano, the iPod Classic, and the iPod Touch, we were expecting more of the same, a few tweaks here and there. Everything would be fine. Not so. At the very start of the database, a couple of what appear to be SHA-1 hashes have been inserted, which appear to lock the iTunes database to one particular iPod and prevent any modification of the database file. If you try to do either of these, the hashes will not mesh, and the iPod will report that it contains zero songs when the iTunes DB would otherwise be perfectly adequate. Of course, this will be quickly reverse engineered, and then Apple will change it again, and on and on. So this is, I certainly understand their need to change it regularly because I don't know why, but they certainly have that right. Whether they have a need, they have the right. But for people who just don't like iTunes, screw you, is Apple's response to them. You know, if you would prefer to use Winamp, if you would prefer to use GTK Pod or Rhythmbox or any one of the others, you can't anymore. Too bad for you.
No one's holding a gun to anyone's head to own an iPod or to operate it with iTunes or with anything else.
But this just goes back to who's the biggest bully. You know, Apple is essentially saying if you're not going to use iTunes, you can't have an iPod.
The community works way around it.
Right.
If you buy a car, you have to buy Mobile or Exxon or somebody's gasoline.
But you can buy anybody's gasoline. You don't have to buy Toyota's gasoline or Ford's gasoline. You can go to any gas station. You can also go to any service station.
You're not buying anybody's, I'm sorry, you're not buying Apple's music either. You're just buying music through Apple.
But what if I don't want to buy music through Apple? What if I want to take my iPod and just download a bunch of free podcasts and put them on my machine and I don't own an Apple or a Windows system? Or I don't own an Apple system because all the Apple people have drunk Kool-Aid. I own a Windows system and I prefer Winamp. Or I own a Linux box and I prefer Rhythmbox.
iTunes is free. What's the problem?
Not under Linux, it isn't. There is no iTunes for Linux.
Okay, under Linux, you have a point. But again, nobody's holding a gun to anyone's
head. There's a difference between it's free, so use it, and it's free and you have a choice not to use it. There are people who just don't like iTunes. They want to use something else and they can't now. That's what I'm saying. Apple has cut off your choice.
If you insist on running an iPod and Linux.
Well, it may not be an insist. I do run Linux and I'd like to have an iPod. I mean, I can't. Now the point is I either have to go out and buy a Mac or Windows box or I can't have an iPod. That's what Apple is telling me.
Yes.
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 Well, I don't think that's nice.
Okay. I understand your point of view.
That's it. That's all I'm saying. I think it's pretty low class of them, frankly.
But there are other MP3 players on the market.
There are indeed, and I will be buying one. And that is money of mine that Apple will not get.
And that's freedom of choice.
And that's not freedom of choice because I do not have the choice to buy an iPod.
Granted.
So it is not freedom of choice. All right. Our next caller is Bob from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Well, I want to install an additional memory stick in my Windows machine. And what's in there is 512 DR400,
mm-hmm.
two of them. Can okay. I install a 1 megabyte spec, or do I have to install two additional 512?
Well, you got to check with the specs of your motherboard and the booklet that came with your machine.
Okay.
Some
will
computers
tell you the different, usually memory configurations and what memory it will accept. Depending on the age of the machine, it will tell you whether you can put in 256, 512, or whether it'll handle 1 gig sticks. But no, you don't have to do it in pairs anymore.
Sometimes you do. It's usually the higher end computers that what do they call it? They bond the two RAM buses together, so two RAM cards looks like a single faster card. Memory interleaving.
Well,
so some computers do that, but it's a higher end models.
The specs on the motherboard.
Check the specs on the motherboard.
Right, which should have come in the manual with your computer.
I think it's online.
Yeah, it's usually online too. It's interesting. Some of the older computers, had a 512 meg maximum. You could only put two 256s in it.
Mm-hmm.
And
about 3 years old, I think.
Yeah. Just always double check and make sure what speed it will handle. That's the other critical thing too.
Most of the bigger, more reputable memory vendors have that information already. So if you can call up the memory vendor and tell them, you've got this model computer, especially if it's a name brand model. If it's home built, then it's trickier.
Well, that's good information.
Well, that really just is based on the motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you can pick the information off the motherboard, and it's usually silk screen down there somewhere, even if you built your own, particularly if you built your own machine, you ought to know what motherboard you put in it. You can call any of the memory vendors.
Like in the CD should be.
Right.
The CD has all the help files and everything else.
Right.
It didn't come with a book.
Right.
Have you got time for another quick question?
Very quick.
Continues to lose its wireless connection. Boots up, gets the wireless connection, and then loses it shortly after. What would you check?
How far away is the computer from the base station?
It's about probably 85 feet or 100 feet, but it's worked continuously for three years.
What's changed?
That's about the limit of Wi-Fi, so there may be some new piece of interference in between them. Check the antenna connections in your card and your base station. Maybe they've come loose.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Sure. Mm-hmm. The problem with diagnosing wireless is you need a second machine.
Yeah.
We had exactly that problem at work. One guy had a tough time with his wireless. It kept going up and down and up and down. And my wireless was 100% all the time. But I had a different model, make and model laptop. We found somebody else with the identical make and model he had. Same exact. But clearly it was either the component or the driver. Turned out to be the driver. But you couldn't tell unless you had exactly that make and model to test it against.
Similar to diagnosing a cell phone problem. Who's got more bars? You got to have another cell phone to tell.
Right, exactly.
Who's got the signal.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly. All right, our next caller is Chris from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Guys, how you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. Hey,
you have another question? I'm sorry.
That's it.
Go ahead.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
We're using Outlook Express. We're going to get chastised for that.
Yes, you are.
My wife had a message come up that while in there, the message cannot be displayed. Outlook Express encountered an unexpected problem with displaying this message. Check your computer for low memory or low disk space. Yeah. Kind of freeze up and then have to shut it down.
I can say one word.
Well, yeah, don't
dance.
Well, did you? How much? Well,
lucky. Actually, that may have been a huge file it was trying to download. And
how much memory does your computer have, and how much free disk space does it have?
I'm seeing a lot of that at my end, as far as repairs. That I would very, without doing anything else, intuitively just say dance the tango because something is creeping in there.
Yeah. Okay. I did that twice and finished that last night.
Okay.
Still got the problem. We're only using about half the disk.
All right, you're using about half the disk space, and how much memory do you have?
You would have to ask.
I would. Yeah, all right, here's the deal.
512 minimum.
Right, here's the deal. If this is one email that you're having a problem with, it's likely that someone sent you something gigantic, or ginormous as we say now. That's either a big picture from somebody who doesn't know any better, or someone has sent you some program, which is probably not something you want to download and run. So the thing to do is to call your internet service provider, the people who provide you with email, and have them remove that mail message from the queue.
A lot of times you can do that yourself by logging into webmail.
Well, that's true.
Mail to web.
Well, most of the providers, webmail.rochester.ir.com, webmail.frontiernet.net, most of the providers have their own webmail interface as well. Or there's the generic mail-to-web interface for picking up your mail. And you can delete over the large messages like that, too.
So you suggest going into webmail as opposed to doing it right through Outlook?
Well, go into webmail and delete the big message that may be clogging up your mailbox, preventing it from downloading the rest of the mail.
Yeah, because you're just doing it right there up on your server, not waiting for it to try to get down to your machine and then deleting it there.
The other issue it may be is that Outlook and Outlook Express have a limit to the size of the database file. It used to be 2 gigs, and then later versions it's 4 gigs. So if you're the kind of person that never deletes old mail, your mail database file may be too big, and that's why you're getting a disk space error. It's sort of erroneous. It's not that the disk is full, it's the mail database is full.
My wife is notorious for that. She saves all her deleted messages. I told her not.
Well, there's your problem. Delete all of that stuff.
Well, Outlook, I know Outlook does it. Outlook Express have the archive option? With Outlook,
It doesn't do it.
It doesn't do it automatically. You can archive your old mail into another database, so you can still get to it if you want. But then it cleans up your primary database.
All right, so I'll look into that.
Yeah.
All right.
One other quick question: if none of this works and I decide that I want to migrate over to Thunderbird, do you think that would solve the problem, or would I be dragging the problem?
You would have. Well, it depends on what the problem is.
Yeah.
If the problem is, as I said, a huge message that's a virus or whatever, blah, 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 then you're going to drag the problem with you. If, as Steve said, it's a database issue, then that problem will go away since Outlook and Thunderbird have different databases. Do the house cleaning first. Delete the deleted messages. Empty your trash. I'm sorry, I know your wife has this desperate need to keep all this stuff. The problem is, the program won't work with it.
It goes way beyond the PC.
Yeah.
But if it's in the trash.
I understand that. I'm a pack rat. I have the Howdy Doody marionette that I had when I was 5 years old.
Might be worth
it. It is worth a bucket of money now, but who knew? I kept it because I wanted to keep it. But the point is, well, bucket of money. I have so little money that the amount that this thing is worth looks like a bucket to me.
Sandpail.
It's worth a sand pail of money. Thank you. The little plastic, the little red plastic.
It's a bucket.
It's a bucket. So yeah, you really, you know, whether you want to keep it, that's great. The problem is you have the option of moving to a bigger and bigger house as you accumulate more and more junk.
George Carlin's got a routine on that.
I know.
Life is just a quest, a place to put your stuff.
Yep.
It made you forget your point. Sorry.
Yes, it did. Thank you. Anyway, whatever I just said, do that. All right. Thanks.
That's the universe.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Well, whatever. Our next caller is not going to be on for a moment because we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we will.
It doesn't
talk
take much to amuse him.
And thank God, because he's looking at us all afternoon. So it really, you better not take much to amuse him. We'll come back with news and stuff and things and business and Dave and Steve and Chris and Rob and me, Nick, and you and 39 minutes after the hour and sound bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. All right, let's just go right to the phones and start there. Our next caller is Marcy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Marcy. What's your question?
Well, I'm wondering, before I get a little cocky and arrogant here, because I only read my email on webmail, am I any safer by doing that than I just stop downloading it to my computer?
It's actually worse. Since you're reading it on webmail, you're always looking at it as executable HTML code. So if anything is hiding in the message, it will automatically run.
Oh, well, it won't come up and say, do you want to run something, or does it just do it anyway?
It just does it anyway.
It pretty much just does it anyway. Depends on what web browser do you use.
Uh-huh. The that's
a little better, but still not ideal. Mm-hmm. The thing that I might suggest, there's two things here. One is downloading your mail to your PC.
Yeah.
And the other is what you read it with.
I would never use anything by Microsoft.
Well, yeah, God bless you, Marcy. You're all right in my book.
Yeah, I've learned my lesson. I've listened to you guys play. I tell everybody, don't use Microsoft products on these things.
There you go. There are two ways to get your mail. One is with what's called the POP protocol, post office protocol, and that downloads mail to you generally.
Yep, that's what I used to do. My Eudora is so old, I'd have to update it.
Oh, Eudora's working on a new version, and it's really going to be just a skin around Thunderbird.
Oh, okay.
But the other way is IMAP, thank you, and that actually leaves your mail on the server.
Oh.
And then you can read it really from anywhere. The problem is most internet service providers don't want you doing that, or they'd have to have petabytes worth of disk storage.
Yeah, most of them only give you like 10 or 20 megabytes of disk space to store your mail.
Yeah, I've got like 100 per account.
See, now there you go. That works out nicely, but even so, you just have to, you know, be a little more careful as to how you manage your mail. If they offer IMAP, then I might suggest Thunderbird.
Oh, okay.
Because what that will do is, if you set it up correctly, it leaves your mail on the server and only downloads the headers, right? The subject and the who's it from and the date, stuff like that. And then when you go to read an email, every time you go to read it, it downloads that email. But one of the nice things you can do in Thunderbird is under the view menu for message body, you can say, I want to see the original HTML, simplified HTML, or plain text. And either of the last two, simplified or plain text, you won't get a lot of the possible viruses or bad things lurking in the email. With simplified HTML, it'll show the formatting. So, you know, if things were in columns or whatever, you would see that. But it doesn't load any of the other stuff. So you're much safer that way.
Oh, and here I thought I was doing a good thing. I just got tired of downloading all the time.
No, I understand that. Mail is no longer fast. Particularly nowadays when everybody's sending around gigantic freaking pictures and sound files.
Well,
and
that's what they're counting on is you, now that, you know, they're in the body of the text is not much. It's the attachment.
Right.
Where they're hiding stuff.
You know, I know a lot of people who send IncrediMail, which is a pretty cool program. I mean, it is a pretty cool program.
Yes, it is.
But you end up with, you know, Let's Go to Lunch is a 50K file.
Or a
200K file, because they've added sound and animations and a background picture, and suddenly 200K to say Let's Go to Lunch is a little excessive from my point of view.
Yep.
Now, my webmail has a spam folder which throws things, which usually is spam, and then I can report it as spam and delete it. Occasionally I find somebody who accidentally put the wrong thing in the header or said something the wrong way, and so it tosses it to spam.
Right.
Now, it's obviously going to only bring stuff in from the inbox.
No, you set up as many boxes as you want.
Oh, no, but I mean, my different, but, you know, because like I have these multiple folders out there on my webmail.
Yep.
And so I go out there and I just take what I just go through.
Keeping webmail is not necessarily a bad option. Yeah. Just be very aware of what you're going to open.
Oh, yeah.
Marcy, whose service are you using?
Blue Frog,
okay.
I dial up.
And do they provide?
No wonder you're tired of downloading your mail.
Ah, right. That's only dial up, right.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can go high speed and still have your email through them. But my computer, I've maxed out the motherboard. I couldn't put in high speed if I wanted. There's no more slots left.
Well, you can do high speed via USB too, of course.
What?
Sure.
But I do have a USB hub.
There you go. There are USB to Ethernet connectors.
Most of the high-speed routers come with USB and Ethernet in the router. You can use one or the other.
Right.
Ethernet's easier for connection, but USB works too.
There you go. We are going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 49 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. No, this is my theme song.
You know, Rob, whenever you play this, the wind kicks up in here and Nick's hair blows back.
He feels like he's, you know, the Lone Ranger.
The back of his hair, or I'm sorry, the back of his shirt puffs out a little bit like a cape.
High on a mountaintop above a small Midwestern city, stands a citadel of truth and justice. What?
I think that's the theme song from Big Valley.
Does that mean I'm Linda Crystal? I don't know. Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And 54 minutes after the hour, it's the Big Voice Soundbites. All right, back to the phones. We have Benny from Rochester, New York on the line. Welcome, Benny. What's your question?
Yes, hi. I was wondering what exactly is phishing And how do I get people to stop fishing me?
Question is actually fairly easy to answer. Fishing basically is, and that's P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, by the way. Yeah. And what it is when you get an email that says, oh, there's a problem with your eBay account. Click here to log in. And you click there, and it takes you to what looks like a perfectly legitimate eBay site or banking site or whatever it might
be. Bank of America. Yeah. It looks official as all get out. Only one problem.
And you don't have an account.
I don't have an account there.
Yeah, I get them from eBay all the time. I don't have an eBay account. You click on it. It takes you to what looks to be a perfectly legitimate website. You log in, and suddenly you're in eBay, and you don't even know something went wrong. What's happened is you've been phished. The email is fake. It took you to a fake website. You log in. It therefore captures your username and password. Not only do they now own it, but they pass it on to eBay. So you get logged in and don't even know you've been phished.
I see.
So
there's nothing I can do about this, really.
Well, there's nothing you can do about getting the email. There's a lot you can do to prevent yourself from clicking on the links. Okay. No legitimate company of any sort anywhere
or
will
bank.
Ever send you an email that says click here to log in. You may get something that says there's a problem with your eBay account. Go to eBay and log in.
Okay.
So just what you have
don't
to remember is never click
email.
On the links.
Okie doke. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Benny. Our next caller is Jeremy and Henrietta. Welcome, Jeremy. What's your question?
I have a wireless network that's not secure, and I'm wondering, I have a laptop that I'd like to log in, but it's not, you know, secure enough. How do I make it secure? What's the best?
You've got to go into the router and set up the security for it so it's locked down.
So can I reset my router completely and then just do that? And
you don't have to reset it. You can just log into the router.
It will reset itself when you turn security on.
Yeah, when you turn the security on, it'll ask you for, whether you want to do WEP, WEP2, WAP.
There's several different security protocols you can use. The oldest of the protocols is WEP. And that's very easily broken.
So you can basically break that with a wristwatch.
Yeah, so you want to use WPA. Now,
WPA.
You have to match. Your router has to have WPA in it, and your computer's wireless card has to have WPA in it.
Okay.
So if they're older devices, it may only be able to do WEP, which is better than nothing.
Yeah,
but
it's not horrible. It's just not great.
It'll stop the casual hacker, but not a dedicated hacker.
Right.
So, because it's connected to my DSL, to the DSL router, is that... I mean, I'm not sure how to do that, but I guess I can figure it out.
You have to log into the router. When you got the thing, you got a little booklet that told you how to log into the router to set various things through the web browser.
Okay.
That's it.
All right, cool. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
It is very important to remember to do that. I had a group of people from school come over for a class I was taking, and a bunch of people came over. One guy opened his laptop, turned it on, and went, you have unsecured wireless? I said, for the next hour and a half, I do, sure. I unsecured it before they came over so we could all get online and do stuff. Then after they left, I put it back again.
Yeah.
There's a big issue with some Trojans and viruses that turn your computer into a fake hotspot.
Yep.
Or a hacker or less legitimate user will go to like a coffee shop, turn their computer into a fake hotspot, let people log into them, and then capture all their passwords and banking information.
You don't even have to do that. I cannot tell you the number of times I have been, look at this, Eagle Wolf wants secure wireless. What's his address? It's all fixed now. It's all fixed, Eagle Wolf. Sorry. All right, we're done. That's it. I can't tell you, though, the number of times that I've gone to a public spot and logged in and sucked up information that I really, really shouldn't have. You want to be very careful when you're in public. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I don't know why, but I do. I want to thank Steve Ray. I don't know why even less. I know why I want to thank Chris Reich for his able assistance with the archives. And, of course, who could not want to thank Rob Linton for everything he does and doesn't do for us here in the... In this, thank you very much. Very charming. A very charming lad. He knows the Italian.
Use all
gestures.
Your fingers to wave.
Yeah, right. You're number one with me too, Rob. I'm Nick Francesco. We're done for another week. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time on the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Bye-bye.